Morning Glory and Evening Grace, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. The big story of the afternoon is ISIS is nearing Kobani, and Turkey will not enter the war with ground troops as the United States sends a delegation there to argue about it. I'll keep you up to date on any headlines that break throughout the day on either Kobani or on the spread of Ebola or anything else that makes news in the course of today's program. But it's a special show. I have guests in studio with me today that's going to make for a great, great show. Giora Rome is Major General Giora Rome, retired Israeli Defense Forces, former Chief of Staff of the Israeli Air Force, also currently head of civilian aviation in Israel, is the author of an extraordinary new book. It's not new in Israel. It's new here in the United States, called Solitary, The Crash, Recovery, and Resurrection of an Ace Fighter Pilot. He was Israel's first fighter pilot ace. We'll talk about that. His book, Solitary, is linked over at HughHewitt.com. It's in most bookstores now. He's been brought to the studio by my radio pal, Stephen Pressfield, author of, among other things, Lionsgate and Gates of Fire and all the other wonderful books, Killing Rommel, that he's been here to talk about before. And also in the studio, my retired law partner, Joseph Timothy Cook, who's been a guest host on this show before, himself an A6 pilot back in the day off of the USS something or other on the coast of Vietnam. I don't know which one it was. Midway?
F.D. Roosevelt.
Oh, sorry. I got it close enough. So, Giora Rome, welcome to the program. It is great to have you here. Congratulations on Solitary. Would you tell people when the book came out in Israel and why it took a little bit longer to get it to the United States?
Well, the book was published in Israel like 6 years ago, and that was very close to the time when I took the job of head of the civil aviation, which is equivalent to the head of the FAA in this country. And I didn't have the time to take care of the translation and finding a publisher. But as time moved on, I translated it into English. I found a publisher, and the book was published about 3-4 months ago here in America.
It is terrific. It is a throat grabber. It grips you. I read it over the last 3 days because I wanted to read it when you were going to be in studio, and I knew you were coming today because Stephen had set it up. And I had trouble stopping each night. I try not to read a book back-to-back so that you can get some time to think about what you do. And we'll come back and talk about the art of it. But you translated it yourself. That was
Do you have someone else do it? It was translated by an American lady who lives in Israel. But, of course, we had to go through, you know, sentence by sentence, page by page, because it is so... Sometimes it's so professional into the art of aviation that I had to make sure that it's accurate and the language describes what I had in mind.
Well, she did a marvelous job because I'm not a pilot. Cook is a pilot, and Cook loved it, too. You did, didn't you,
yeah,
Mr. Cook?
Absolutely. One of the best aviation books I've ever read, if not the best.
But it's also about courage, and it's about endurance, and it's about comebacks, and we'll talk about that. Stephen Pressfield, how did you meet Giora?
This was when I was researching The Lion's Gate, my book that I wrote about the Six-Day War. And when I went over there, I interviewed, I think, about 70 veterans of the conflict, Israeli veterans over in Israel. And I kept hearing about this pilot, Giora Rome. And everyone told me the stories. He was the first fighter pilot ace, shot down 5 MiGs in the Six-Day War in 2 days, et cetera, et cetera. So finally I got to meet Giora, and we became friends, and we spent a lot of time together. And then one day he kind of casually said to me, you know, I wrote a book too, but it's only been in Hebrew so far. So I said, when is it going to be translated? He said, it's in the works right now. And I said, well, as soon as you get it, please give it to me. So with a partner, my partner, Sean Coyne, we have a little tiny publishing company, and we jumped on it, and it worked out, thank goodness. I think it's an instant classic, a military classic that should be on the walls of any, you know, any shelf, but it's better than that. It's beyond just a military book, and we'll get into that. We're talking about Giora's captivity in Egypt and all and the comeback from that.
You know, I know a half dozen active duty pilots in various branches, both Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps, and they all should read it. And it brings to mind that as we speak, America's running bombing missions over ISIS-controlled territory. In fact, when John Fisher Burns, the great correspondent for the New York Times, was on last week, he said he prays that none of our air troops fall into the hands of ISIS because, Giora, they won't be like your Egyptian captors who were brutal. But these ISIS people, they won't interrogate people, will they? They'll just kill them.
Well, it is different because even though it was not pleasant, that's understatement to describe my experience with Egypt. Israel and Egypt were two states, so there is a certain set of rules of game when there are two states. ISIS is not a state. ISIS is a completely different animal. And I don't think that falling in captivity in ISIS hands is a good thing.
Now, I was interested, if I can ask Tim Cook at the beginning, you know a lot of POWs from the Vietnam era. I think the Egyptians treated Gior pretty brutally, but I don't know how it compares with their experience. I read Jeremiah Denton's book, right. Read a couple of other books about Vietnam POWs, and they went on for 5 years sometimes, and I think they were often just simply denied medical care, not just given atrocious medical. You walked in here, by the way, you are fine. You don't have any limps or anything.
Yes, but I still carry some memories from my injury, and I paid the price. Oh. But I was mainly taken care of after I came back to Israel, a couple of months after I fall in Egypt. But I want to make emphasize the book, as much as it describes being a POW, the real story is about your ability to come to your previous life, not let the Egyptian write your calendar, the calendar of your life. And the book is about the ability of a human being going through a very deep trauma to say, I had a plan, I knew what I wanted to do throughout my life, I'm going to do it no matter what. And this is the book all about.
When you tell your friend Nir you're going to fly the Mirage again, and he says you're crazy, I thought, of course he had to do that. I mean, I don't know if anyone else. Did Nissim, who was in prison with you at the same time, did he return to the cockpit?
No, he never flew again.
So, Tim, what about the relative captivities?
First of all, it's medical care. John McCain was very badly injured in his ejection and subsequent landing, and he got similar medical care, very crude, very basic, but it was medical care. They didn't just throw him in a cell, and it reminded me very much of what McCain received. And as far as the treatment by the captors, again, very similar. There were times when it was quiet and they didn't give you any trouble, and there were times when they were interrogating you, when they were just very physical and violent with these guys, and they all bear both emotional and physical scars from that. So I saw some similarities.
Gior, have you compared notes with the American POWs?
No, I knew several, but we never compare notes. I hosted a general, the name of whom I don't recall right now. He was the very famous F-105 pilot who even was on the on the Time magazine or Life on the. And like 2 weeks later, he fell in captivity, was there for 5 years, and came to visit me when I was a base commander later. But we never compare notes.
And did you ever return to Egypt? Of course, you returned in 1973 to drop bombs on it. But did you ever return to Egypt after the Camp David Accords?
Yes, I came a couple of times in different capacities when I was official of the government. And my only request beyond what I had to do in Egypt, I had to meet the Ministry of Oil, I had to meet the Civil Aviation Authority. I wanted to visit my prison and the hospital where I spent 2 weeks. And from reason which is beyond my understanding, they didn't let me do it.
And did Aziz ever find you or you find Aziz?
No, I didn't find. I know today, because after I published my book in Israel, people came to me, and I know where he lives. He's, of course, he retired from his military intelligence service in Egypt, but we never met. I would like to meet Nadia before Aziz.
This is it, and I'm going to tell the audience, you want to stick with me. There's an epic contest in solitary. There's a lot of air aviation contests, a lot of battles, but there's an epic contest of wills between Aziz and Giora, which is just captivating. And I that no pun intended, you're a captive when it happens, but you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you're going to insult him or he's going to give up trying to break you. And the art in the book is relaying that. And I think, Stephen, in your blurb, probably given very, very conscious, you compare it to Viktor Frankl, and that is an apt comparison.
Yeah, because this is really about an inner war, which is as well a moral war and an ethical war. But it's about a self-resurrection, about putting the pieces back together. As Giora said, his story is the story of a fall from a great height, literally and metaphorically, and then getting back you know, putting one's life back together. And the reason, one of the reasons that it's titled Solitary is not only that Kiora was in solitary confinement, but that that struggle is ultimately a solitary struggle.
There, I'm going out of order in my notes. I got to see if I can find the quote before we go to break here. There is no lower place in the world, in all the world, there is no lower place to fall than the cold concrete floor of solitary confinement. In Egypt, I did not yet fully appreciate how vital it was that I resume flying, not just flying, but combat aviation and fighter jets. This was the only way for me to reclaim my old life. That's page 177. We'll talk more about that when we come back. Solitary is linked at HughHewitt.com. You want to go and get it, whether you're a civilian, but especially if you're in the military, and of course, if you're a pilot, you're going to want to read it tonight. Solitary is linked at HughHewitt.com. Stick around. I'll be right back.
Chase all the clouds from the sky. Back to the days of Christopher Robin.
21 minutes after the hour, America, you may be wondering why I'm playing Back to the Days of Winnie the Pooh by Kenny Loggins. But the most surprising part of Solitary, and I don't know if it was funny or a joke or why they did it, but when my guest, Gioro Rome, was imprisoned in Egypt, he was given four books, five if you count the Jewish prayer book. He was given S.Y. Agon's A Simple Story. He was given Peer Gynt by Ibsen, and he was given Winnie the Pooh and The House at Pooh Corner. And you tried everything to hang on to Winnie the Pooh in your body. Would you tell people what it's like to be given children's books when you have no other contact with the world?
Well, that happened only after I could see the Red Cross representative. That was like 2 months after I fell there. I fall in Egypt. And the first book he brought me was in that Shai Agnon, which is an Israeli author book. And the second book was Winnie the Pooh. And I was kind of insulted at the beginning. Why won't they give me a children book? And later, as I read it dozens of times, I found out that there is a tremendous amount of wisdom and, more than that, optimism in that book. And the more I read it, the more it gave me strength that the world is optimistic and one can find its way no matter what trouble he has to go through. And I thought it's Winnie the Pooh and the Pooh, the house in Pooh Corner. It's not for me to be the critic of A.A. Milne, but it's a wonderful, very humoristic language that gives your life a lot of optimism.
Well, I also thought to be able to draw sustenance from that and not to dismiss it and throw it away was remarkable. And I've truncated the story. I'm going to go back to the beginning now, but I because we needed bump music, I wanted to play that. And we'll come back to those four books. You don't talk much about Ibsen, though, in the rest of Solitary.
I have to confess, for the first time since I came back from Egypt, I didn't reach the last page of Peer Gynt. The English was too much for me, and I didn't go into it. But as you said, I'm not a religious Jew. Yeah. But when the Egyptians asked me, like 3 weeks into captivity, what book, if I could ask for a book, which one would I ask for? I asked for the Jewish prayer book, and I started to pray all the Jewish prayers, the daily Jewish prayers, and it gave me a lot of support and confidence. On top of the fact that in the Jewish prayer book, there are a lot of other parts of other Jewish books, very wise, very clever, that gives you a lot of things to do. So as long as I had it by my bed when I was not taken to solitary confinement, that was the most important book that I carry with.
I'm talking with Gioro Rome, and in the studio with me, Stephen Pressfield, whose wonderful book, The Lion's Gate, set this meeting, and my retired law partner, Tim Cook, himself a fighter pilot, who got a copy of the book, The Lion's Gate, and sent a note off to Pressfield saying, I was back in the cockpit, right? You said something to that effect?
Exactly.
And so we got it all together to talk about this. You can call Gioro in the course of this show and talk to Stephen and Tim as well, 1-800-520-1234. The book Solitary, The Crash, Recovery, and Resurrection of an Ace Fighter Pilot is linked at HughHewitt.com. It's at Amazon, it's at Barnes & Noble's and bookstores everywhere. I think you'll soon see it in airports because it's going to sort of develop a cult following as people realize it's something you want to read if you have a tremendous comeback to make. And I do a show twice a year with the Semper Fi Foundation with the injured Marines, and we talk to 20 to 25 injured Marines every single year, twice a year, and they're always trying to get back to what they were doing beforehand. Sometimes it's not possible if they've lost limbs. In your case, it was possible. I think they'll find solitary amazing. But for the benefit of our friends out there, General, and I call him Giora. He's Major General Giora Rome, retired of the Israeli Defense Forces. Your book opens, quote, "I am dangling beneath my parachute," and that is on September the 11th, 1969. Now, it's not ironic, but it's odd that your terrible day is America's terrible day. So whenever our terrible day comes around, you're thinking about your terrible day as well. And so that's how it begins. "I am dangling beneath my parachute." Your leg isn't where it's supposed to be. Tell people where your leg was.
Well, I had to bail myself. I had to bail myself out of the Mirage above the speed of sound. And when my seat left the quiet and convenient cockpit, I went into a wind that was beyond the speed of sound. The wind took my right leg 180 degrees to the back part of the seat. So when I reopened my eyes 2 seconds later, which is what it takes for the stabilizing parachute to open above the seat when you are above 14,000 feet, I didn't see my right leg, and it took me like half a minute to find it and to bring it back forward. But at the same time, my left elbow was broken while hitting the left part of the cockpit going out. So only my right hand was operating. That was the only part, if I put the brain out for a moment, that was operating. And I put the leg forward and I started the journey to Egypt.
And you describe the journey. Then the book ends 200 plus pages later, and it's October 16th, 1973. And you say in the non-secure communication, "Aziz, this is for you," as you fly off having pulverized an Egyptian Air Force base. That's on page 229.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning and the end of the book. I want to fill, and there's a little biography in there, but I want to fill in for the benefit of the audience a little bit more about you. Your father emigrated from Poland. Obviously, you get some of your resolve from his stubborn determination to make it to Palestine. And we'll cover your early years. But after 1973 war, tell us what happened with the rest of your life that's not in this book. You end up being a major general. What happened?
I was a squadron leader during the Yom Kippur War. And after 2.5 years, I joined the intelligence branch of the Air Force. I was the deputy of the intelligence branch in the Air Force. Later, I went to UCLA to make my MBA, to have my MBA at the Anderson School of Management. I came back. I commanded the two largest Air Force base of the Israeli Air Force. I then was called by Ehud Barak to be his deputy in the general staff of the Israel Defense Forces. And from there, I became the deputy commander of the Air Force. And I was sent by the Minister of Defense to be the defense attaché to Washington between 92 and 95, when Prime Minister Rabin, the late Prime Minister Rabin, was the Prime Minister, and President Clinton replaced President Bush. So I spent 3 years in Washington, and then I came back to Israel and retired.
And retired, and from there went into the civilian aviation world.
Not directly. I went through some other positions. I was in the business world, and I found two things. First, I had a very nice salary, and I didn't have a clue about business. I understood that after 30-something years in the Air Force, that doesn't prepare you to be a good businessman. So I went back to serve the government, and I was in different governmental positions. And for the last 6 years, I'm the equivalent of the administrator of the FAA in Israel.
When we come back from break, we're going to talk about the 67 war and then the war of attrition, about which I knew very little. I actually knew nothing about the war of attrition until I read Solitary. Solitary is Giora Rome's new book. It's available at HughHewitt.com. You can link on it. We'll talk to Stephen Pressfield, Tim Cook as well. Don't go anywhere, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. 34 minutes after the hour, America, it's Hugh Hewitt. I will get to your calls in Portland, Tammy J, anyone else, don't worry, 1-800-520-1234. And if you're stuck in traffic on the west side of L.A. because President Obama has landed, fleeing any part of the country where there's a candidate on the ballot that is in danger because they don't want to be near him, He's back in Los Angeles, and I don't see Jerry Brown even campaigning with him, but he's raising money among the Hollywood super elite tonight. And, Mr. President, welcome back to California. It's always glad to have you. I hope you're listening. I know you landed about 35 minutes ago, and you ought to stay tuned. I don't even know if Giora Rome is in the Labor Party or Likud. He was a friend of Ehud Barak's. That might make him Labor Likud. I don't know. Do you declare publicly when you're retired? Good. All right. So we'll just assume the best that you're in Likud. We'll just assume that. But Stephen, you're not on my team politically. But I'd love your books anyway. And Cook is. So we got a kind of a nice cross section here. You grew up. I want to do your early life, Giora. You grew up and you went to Rialy. Is that how you say it? Rialy School in Haifa.
I went to a military boarding school, the only one which is in Israel during the years when security of the country was the number one mission for the best pupils in Israel. And I went with the best and the brightest names that might not say a lot to these to the listener, like Amnon Lipkin, who died a year ago, who was my classmate, and Matan Vilnai, who was the ambassador now to China, the Israeli, who was my classmate. So we went to the military boarding school that was part of the Rialy school, which was the number one high school in Israel. And that was because we thought that on these years, you know, in the 50s and the early 60s, security of the country is number one mission, and only later came, you know, the economy, welfare, and everything that today is the number one and two.
Now, Rialy had an emblem. I got to find it here. Calm and I think it said calm and something. With calm and confidence is the school credo.
Yeah, this is of the military boarding school. The Rialy has also a very nice credo. Be modest. Behave modestly. This is the Rialy, the civilian side of the house. And the military side is with calm and confidential and
confidence.
Yeah. Let me jump in for 1 second, Hugh, and ask Giora. You were telling me when we talked that there was a concept in Israel in those days called a serving elite.
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I guess that the order of elites in Israel changed through the years. In those years, the people who dealt with defense, with security, were the elite, and then the academics, and so on. In the last 20 years, I would say that the elites is according to the amount of money that you have. So the rich people became the elite because all of a sudden, it's not the country first and the individual second, but the individual first, and the country, if you remember, you have a country, is second.
You know, that ebbs and flows here, too. There's a book back here that just came in on George Marshall. And I'll read this because he is truly a great American, an extraordinary human being, great story. Tim sits on the selection committee for the United States Naval Academy, is himself a graduate of Annapolis. And I think there were periods of time when getting into Annapolis was practically impossible, and it's that way now. But there were also periods of time post-Vietnam when it wasn't. So that might ebb and flow. You think so?
Yeah, I agree with that. It's really tough now, but it was when I first started, when John Campbell was first elected, it was a little bit easier.
But is the Rialy School still operating?
Oh yeah, it's a leading high school and the military boarding school.
And so when you got out of that, where did you go? Did you go to pilot training immediately?
Yeah, I thought that even though I wanted to be part of the defense of Israel, I wanted to be at the edge where you fight by yourself, and there is no other place where you can exercise the fighting by yourself, where you are the only one who is in charge of your successes and failures as the cockpit of a fighter aircraft. So I guess it was since the 10th grade that it became clear to me that what I want to be is a fighter pilot.
So Cook, you're nodding fast over there.
So immediately, as I joined the military, I went directly to the flying school, and 2 years later, I had my wings.
Do they select you out at flying school, or do they segregate you by skill sets like they do?
Oh, yeah. This is, in Israel, it is extremely tough to be approved and accepted to the flying school. And even then, you have a rate of success of 1 to 10. We started 140 cadets, and 2 years later, we were only 14 pilots standing in the ceremony of getting our wings.
But the other thing, tell me if this is right, Giora, is you go, as a pilot candidate, you go right out of high school rather than here in the States where you've go to...
Yes, well, we do not have college in Israel. In Israel, immediately after the 12th grade, you join the military.
And you go in. Giora Rome is my guest, along with Stephen Pressfield. Stephen, you know, from the Lionsgate, Gates of Fire, of course, Legend of Bagger Vance and Killing Rommel, but Solitary is Giora's new book. It's linked at HughHewitt.com. I'll be right back. Stay tuned. 44 minutes after the hour mark, it's Hugh Hewitt in studio with me, Stephen Pressfield, author of many wonderful books, including, of course, Gates of Fire, most recently The Lionsgate. I put a link of The Lionsgate over at HughHewitt.com. Joseph Timothy Cook, my retired law partner long ago, far away, a fighter pilot in the United States Navy off of the carriers that were doing great things in Vietnam in support of our ground troops there and over Hanoi? Did you ever bomb Haiphong? You weren't allowed to bomb Haiphong.
No. Yeah, we bombed Haiphong. I didn't. I didn't have any Haiphong missions, but we did bomb Haiphong, and we bombed Hanoi, and I've had a couple of missions over Hanoi.
Okay, and I've got, of course, Giora Rome. Major General Rome was Israel's first military ace. He shot down five MiGs in the 1967 war, the Six-Day War. He has a book out, Solitary, The Crash, Recovery, and Resurrection of an Ace Fighter Pilot. Solitary is an amazing book, and you can order Solitary from Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I've linked it over at HughHewitt.com if you want to get there in a hurry. And you can call in the course of today's show and ask him about anything. But I'm setting up in the first hour, before we get to his captivity, his life prior to being shot down on September 11th, 1969, which is going to be very easy for me to remember because of 9/11. But, Giora, tell us about 1967. Give us your war in 7 minutes, your six-day war in 7 minutes.
Oh, I can make it even shorter. I was a lieutenant, a young lieutenant. The whole Air Force went to attack the air bases of Egypt, and only six pairs of Mirages were left to protect the country, to defend the country. And I was on pair number one. I guess that we were selected according to the fact that we are the best dogfight pilots of the squad, the different squadrons. And it so happened that in the first 3 days, I shot down five aircraft, three on the first day, two in the Suez Canal area, Egyptians, and later that day, far away in Syria, Syrian MiG-21. On the second day, I was hit on the Golan Heights, and I was taken to a hospital from which I escaped by myself.
It's in your book. It's in Stephen's book, The Lionsgate.
I escaped, and I went back to my squadron, and I flew the last mission of the third day of the war, and that I shot down two MiG-17s. And if anyone wants to see it, if you click YouTube and the History Channel, there is something called Dogfights in the Middle East, and the story of that fight between me and the two MiG-17s is on the History Channel. So anyway, that was the third day of the war, and later I was kind of pulled back that I was allowed to do only one mission a day because the feeling was in the squadron that I, in some injustice way, take more planes that my fair share. So that was the end of
it. Also, though, because you became very well known in Israel, and your promotion was a little bit unusual.
Yeah, well, about a month after the war, we had kind of a victory party of the whole Air Force in Jerusalem. And everyone was there, the government and everyone. I think Danny Kaye was the master of ceremony. And at the beginning, the commander of the Air Force gave a certificate to every pilot who shot down an enemy aircraft. And it was according to the number of aircraft. So I was the last one because I had the highest number. And when I climbed the stage, Moti, who was the commander of the Air Force, was a little bit drunk because he drank, you know, a little bit of scotch with each pilot. And he made a mistake and called my rank a captain and not a lieutenant, which in Israel, in Hebrew, it's two similar words. So he called me captain and not lieutenant. And before I knew, the whole audience started to shout, give him a captain, promote him to captain. And Moti was stuck, and he looked, and on the first row sat Yitzhak Rabin, who was the chief of staff. And Rabin gave him a small nod of the hand, like, give him a captain, no big deal. And my squadron leader by that time climbed the stage, brought two to captain
insignia,
and so I was promoted on the stage, and that's part today of the Air Force legend stories.
Yeah, you know, Pressfield, you're a storyteller. There are so many stories connected. Mati, you referred to Mati. Mati is he's throughout solitary.
Yeah,
and Woody Hodd.
I would like to. Is he alive?
No, he's not alive.
What a character! I mean, when he met with you and said, "No one has been through what you've been through." You decide what you want to do, and I will make it so. I think it's like Captain Kirk or Captain Picard. It's like out of a movie. He really is remarkable. But you kept running into all sorts of people like this in the Israeli General Command.
Yeah, well, there are. That's, you know, when you first you meet Giora, and then you meet Ron Ronen, his squadron commander, and Hemi Shmuel, and all these. It's just one after another. It's sort of like hitting the Knights of the Round Table in a way. At least that's how it felt like to me.
And Ron Ronen gave you the command of the 115th Squadron after Goldie, was that his name?
Yeah,
was Colonel
killed.
Goldie was killed. And he had been, had he been in the squadron with you when you were shot down?
He was the, I was Tulip 4. Ron Ronen was Tulip 1. He was the leader of the four aircraft that crossed the Suez Canal and went deep into Egypt. I made a lot of sorties with Ron Ronen, and in one of the sorties, as you mentioned, I didn't come back.
What an arc of a story to fly with him. Cook, do you remember who you flew with in sorties?
I remember, yeah, most of them. I think I do, yeah.
You see, I find it remarkable that you can remember who's in the first position, who's in the fourth position, and the guy that you're with when you're shot down promotes you to run the squadron. And by the way, for you aviation people out there, I found this amazing. Your first flight in an A-6, Skyhawk.
A-4.
A-4. I get it wrong all the time. I'm a civilian. Your first flight in an A-4 was a combat mission.
That was really, if there is anything crazy in the book, this is this flight. I was assigned a squadron leader because the previous one was killed 3 days before the war. And no one knew that Yom Kippur War is going to break out. And I said, okay, so I'll come, I'll take charge of the squadron, I make myself a conversion course, and I learn to fly the A-4, no big deal. And all of a sudden, there is the Yom Kippur War. And I had to make a decision. And that was 2 p.m. on Saturday. And I said to myself, I'm going to fly. And I put myself in a formation of four aircraft that flew to the Suez Canal. And the leader was my student from the flying school. And I went to him and I said, Kochva, his name was Kochva. Kochva, I'm your number two. You take care of me. You tell me speeds, you tell me, we have 25 minutes from here to the Suez Canal. This is the length of my course. And he said, Giora, whatever you say. And that's the way I made my first flight. Big mistake. Big mistake. I mean, unless you understand that when you are very young, you take risks that are totally uncalculable. They're out of the scope. But I guess that when you are young and soldiers are young, we do things that usually you don't have to do.
It worked out well. In hour three, we're going to talk about that squadron. I think it flew more than 700 missions in the Yom Kippur War.
Yes.
And the extraordinary return. But one more segment in this hour. Solitary is the new book by Giora Rom. We'll be back. It's linked over at QHewitt.com. Go and get it. Your phone calls are welcome at 1-800-520-1234. I'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. 55 minutes after the hour. Giora Rom is my guest. In studio with me also, my retired law partner, Joseph Timothy Cook. Stephen Pressfield, extraordinary author whose books have entertained and whose interviews with me have always generated so much excitement. You can go get Solitary, Giora's brand new book. Well, it's not brand new. It's 6 years old, but it's new in English. It's been in Hebrew for the last 6 years, but just translated this year, just out now. Solitary is linked at HughHewitt.com. The crash, recovery, and resurrection of an ace fighter pilot. It is riveting. It is absolutely riveting. So, Giora, after the war, you've been promoted in this unorthodox way. The war of attrition begins. Now, I know Israeli history pretty well. Sir Martin Gilbert, I've read all of his work. I've read Paul Johnson's The History of the Jews. I keep up on this stuff. I go see Golda Meir, One Man, One Woman Shows, you know, The Balcony, all that stuff. I try and get it right. But I had no idea that there was a war of attrition that sounds bloodier than I would have ever imagined. And this is, who shoots you down? Did you ever figure out who shot you down on September 11th, 1969?
You mean on the personal level?
Well, just where it came from. Was it a battery of rockets on the canal?
No. We went to a dogfight against six MiG-21, and I was chasing two MiG-21, and I bypassed two MiG-21 that were chasing by two Mirages. And I assumed, and that was a big mistake, that they will take care of me, protecting my tail. And they didn't. So when I launched my missile at my MiG-21, those that I just bypassed launched two missiles at me. One hit me, and that was it.
Now, we lose planes in training accidents all the time. I don't think we've lost a plane to ground or air fire since Vietnam. Have we, Joseph Timothy Cook, United States?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've lost airplanes in other combat. We lost an airplane in Eastern Europe. I can't remember which country in there when we were
They made the movie about
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
They made the movie about
we've
that.
We've lost airplanes.
So how many Israeli pilots have gone into captivity and emerged from it?
Well, I don't know what you mean by the word emerge, but first when you...
Lived through it.
But when you parachute, where I parachuted, which is the delta of the Nile, where all the farmers are, you have a lot of chance that they will kill you, which what happened to many Israeli pilots. Oh. When I say many, I don't speak about dozens, but like a couple of pilots were killed by the Egyptian farmers. I was very fortunate not to be killed by them.
Although you got hit in the head with a rock by a boy, that humanized you, you said. The farmers kind of saw you bleed a little bit.
I was lying in a cotton field. With my, as I told you, my right leg totally crushed, my thigh bone and my left elbow. And on top of that, while they were still fighting on top of me, hundreds of farmers, a little boy came with a stone to hit my face, and in fact, he hit my eyebrow, which started to bleed, you know, like from
a gusher.
Yeah.
We'll pick up the story in Hour 2, America. You can pick up the book Solitary by going over to HughHewitt.com or to Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. Solitary by Giora Rome. We'll be back after the news. Headlines as well on the latest from the ISIS attack on Kobani. If it breaks news, we'll tell you about it here on the Hugh Hewitt Show.